All lines are now bridged.
All right, thank you very much, and good morning, everyone. Welcome to the EHR Reporting Program Task Force. I'm Mike Berry, I'm with ONC, and just want to thank all of our task force members for their hard work behind the scenes trying to get us ready for our task force meeting today. I'm going to start our meeting with roll call, so when I call your name, please indicate that you are present. And I'll start with our co-chairs, Raj Ratwani.
Present.
Jill Shoemaker.
Present.
Zahi Butt. Jim Jurgis. Bryant Karras.
Present.
Joseph Kunich. Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Ken Mandel. Abby Sears.
Present.
Sasha Turnmont.
Good morning.
And I believe Cheryl Turney is. Cheryl, are you on today? Steve Waldron.
Good morning.
All right. Thank you so much, everybody. And now I'd like to turn it over to our co-chairs, Raj and Jill. Take us away.
Great. Thank you, Mike. Welcome, everyone. And I echo Mike's response. Thank you again for your time and carving out this space for you to contribute. We really appreciate your expertise. We have a lot to cover today. We're going to start by reviewing our public health measures that we talked about last week. We'll have Bryant and Sasha present the recommendations. And we still have some of those recommendations that are still in the under consideration bucket that we're going to try to move over to the consensus bucket. And then we're going to dig into the clinical care measures. And we have Stephen Lane and Abby Sears that will be presenting that. Then we'll have time for public comment. And then we'll wrap it up and then adjourn by 11:30. So next slide, please. And I think we can go to probably slide 10. These are just some reference documents that we've talked about in the past. And they're there if you want to refer to them. But I think we can just keep going to slide 10. All right, awesome. So I'm going to turn it over to Bryant and Sasha right now, and we'll pull up the Google Doc and review the recommendations.
Hey, folks. I was just scrolling to make sure I'm looking at the same part of this document as we have on the screen here. All right. So the first recommendation we had about the public health measures, we had some that I think are agreed upon from our discussion last week, and then a couple that I think we need further conversation about. We suggested the denominator of measure one be updated to number of immunizations administered. We suggested that the numerator of measure one be updated to the number of administrations whose information was electronically submitted to a registry. We still have down in the recommendations for further discussion some ambiguity about what success might look like there. So I'm not sure we totally have agreement on success in that metric yet. But the updated denominator and numerator suggestions will help address the confusion of the numerator being larger than the denominator. We suggested that if a stratification is used, it be in the numerator by the registry submitted to. One of our goals overall was to minimize burden on provider organizations and data collection, and as part of that, we suggest the same reporting frequency as the other measures in the program, annually for a 12-month reporting period with no look-back. For further conversation, we discussed but didn't really come to consensus on the fact that developers might have to change their agreements with providers to be able to report any of this data. Data use agreements may not encompass this type of reporting. Any stratifications that we would pick would have to be clearly defined, and we talked about state being one example, although we're actually recommending using a registry-based stratification rather than a state stratification. And then stratifications will obviously need to be prioritized carefully where we want to sort of spend our complexity tokens. And there's interest in adding, as you saw up in the edits on the numerator, a success indicator. I don't know that we have consensus yet on what success would look like there. To be clear about that, I saw Bryant, you put in one suggestion here. I'm not wholeheartedly convinced personally. I think the complexity there might outweigh the value, but open to other feedback from developers.
Yeah, and I'm just to chime in as well. I think having the stratification by different states will also add dissolve the ambiguity. What do you, you know, if you have New York State and New York City, New York City is not a state, so having any jurisdictions for which you're reporting would be making more clear.
And I think I saw Steve Lane, your hand was up. I'm not sure if that was by accident or if you had a comment. Okay.
Sorry, I was on mute. My bad.
Okay.
I didn't know whether we... so I was talking on mute. I didn't know whether we were raising hands, given how small the group is. That first item about developers may have to change their agreements, I mean, I think that's sort of a cross-cutting issue. I don't think we need to belabor it in each of our segment discussions. They may, I think it all depends on how those agreements are written today. I think this is just something that we need to acknowledge and not worry about it. You know, I support the idea of stratifying by registry, and that does make a lot of sense for the reasons that have been discussed. And the issue of successful transmission is tricky because I think it kind of depends on how things are set up by each developer and by each customer as to whether or not that data would be readily available. I think, it is important that these interfaces be set up in a way that they're useful, that they actually transmit data. But it seems to me that that's a lot to ask in the first iteration of these metrics. So I would tend to say, let's focus on the submission first time around and think about successful at a later date, just to keep it simple.
I still think that Brian, just to reemphasize successful transmission, I'm at the immunization registry conference right now, taking place in Portland, Oregon, and 8 out of 50 state registries have capability to send back acknowledgement messages and have proven and tested against a certification process that the American Immunization Registry Association is offering. Voluntary certification, your system can do what it's supposed to do. So I think that 5 years ago, I would have said, yes, I agree with you. I don't think we can measure acknowledgements, but nowadays I think we can.
Well, then let's separate the measures. I mean, let's have one measure for submission and a separate measure for, known successful submission. I would have no problem with that.
Yeah, I think that's really helpful, and I think that does bring some clarity to that. Are there others that have comments around this? Is this something that we can reach an agreement on?
I do agree with Sasha, though. On the complexity token, the fact that the acknowledgement messages are being sent back doesn't mean that the EHR vendor has a way to log or process or is even reading those. But I think it's important that we do emphasize that those are logged or cataloged into whether they're a really successful acknowledgement or an acknowledgement that says you have errors in your 807 message. Get people to start processing and reading those, the data quality better.
Are there others on the call that have comments or knowledge around this that they can give us some perspective?
So I guess maybe just asking a question. is this something that can be reported on by the registry? And I guess if so, does that influence if this is where we want to spend our complexity tokens, adding like two measures about immunization registry submission? And is that more important to us than other stratifications or other measures in a public health space?
The public health measures are important. So I think it's a false choices to pick under over and under, but and the ONC final rules just solidify that provider systems have to public health measures. Their points.
Certainly there are many things that are important, but I guess it's not really a false choice when we think about, you know, that there's a limited amount of development investment available to be put into the EHR reporting program. Should we talk about measure two, or I guess maybe to propose a little bit of specificity here? It sounds like we could, I put a comment on the first recommendation that can be pulled into an overarching section. The second two, I think we have consensus about recommending stratification by registry, so I don't know that we need sort of these two any longer, and I don't know that we have consensus yet on the success concept. I tried to capture all of the different considerations.
Okay, anyone have any further comment about these two points before we move on? I'd rather talk about it now than at our future call, because I think we'll lose some of the context as we move forward. So if there's any comments right now, that would be really helpful. All right, hearing none, Sasha, go ahead and move on to the next ones.
All right, so for querying IIS, we had agreed upon, again, a goal was to minimize provider burden. Like the other measure, I think we could move this to like an overarching section, if that makes sense. I'll put in a comment to that effect. We don't need, it's true universally, I don't think we need it specifically in each one. We suggested the denominator being updated to the number of encounters. As with other encounter-based measures, we'd need a definition. We suggested that the numerator be updated to the number of query responses from the IIS received. That helps address the confusion of the numerator being larger, which could be confusing. And when we had the same reporting frequency recommendation as we did above, we could still move the agreements update one to an overarching section, like we commented on the first measure. And stratifications would have to be clearly defined if we decide to recommend any. They're possible. We'd have to prioritize. And then, Bryant, you added a comment about recommending July 1 through June 30th as a reporting period. I don't have strong feelings about what the reporting window would be personally, but I do think it should be the same across every measure.
I'll just chime in. This is Stephen. I support the July to June reporting period. I think that makes a lot of sense, given that flu vaccine in particular is a winter-weighted activity, having it sort of span across two reporting periods could create some added confusion. Summer is a big time for pediatric immunizations before school, but I think this would suit it well.
This is Abby, and I second that.
Joe has his hand raised. Joe, go ahead. And Joe, if you're talking, we can't hear you. You might be on mute.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you now. Go ahead.
Okay. I was looking, you know, at numerator, denominator. So is the expectation of this is that the provider is doing the query of, you know, at all their encounters per se. So, you know, you say a family practice comes in, they may not query for immunizations every encounter. And then if you're, is this, would a measure like this be specific to only certain types of providers? So you have specialty clinics with providers in there that they have no interest in immunizations. They're not going to query. They may not even look at them because that's not what they're treating the patient for if they're a specialty clinic. And so I kind of worry from a performance perspective, if you have that low numerator and that large denominator, it looks like you're performing badly when that's not the, you know, real case. It's more of when do you need to actually query for immunizations?
Yes, we did talk about that, and we actually talked about if it was possible to narrow the denominator, which the ways in which we wanted to narrow it seemed to have problematic side effects. Either they were not standardized in a way that then would impose burden, or they would not give certain certified products an opportunity to report, potentially if they were focused on a specialty, for example. So I think the sort of feeling in the initial review of this was that it would have to be accounted for in interpreting the data for both sending immunization messages to a registry and for looking at query responses. There will have to be an understanding that there are certainly specialty clinics where immunizations are not going to necessarily be in their scope of practice, and where, you know, a product particularly serves those areas that will affect the data reported, and it will not be possible to simply assume, for example, that every encounter ought to have a query. That, you know, is likely not true if the encounter is to have an X-ray or something. So,
okay. Well, I'm thinking from an adoption and, you know, reporting perspective that something like this should just be the capability and one encounter and you met. You know, a lot of the interoperability measures are like that, and I know it doesn't give them much teeth as far as promoting, you know, usage of it, but I just would not want to get into where CMS is utilizing this as some type of performance metrics with this type of numerator denominator. Like setting a threshold, like you have to have at least 50% of your encounters to do this. If that's the case, then you have to really make it narrow to when it's appropriate versus just...
But I think that's really a separate step. I mean, we're just defining how to collect the metrics and report them, you know, whether or not or when CMS utilizes that is another step. So I don't think collecting the metrics is a problem. I think getting this level of granularity is a good idea.
No, I agree with you on that. But, you know, living on the provider side and, you know, having to, you know, explain this to the providers and why it's important. And, you know, if it's tied to something from a, you know, measurement and threshold, then it becomes more difficult. So, I agree, you know, it is good. I'm not saying it's not a good measure, just that, you know, somewhere, I don't know, in the recommendations or something, to know that not every encounter will be appropriate if we're going to use every encounter as a denominator. And so just making sure that CMS or any agency looking at this would understand that. That's all. Thank you.
Yeah, hey, thanks, Joe. Brian. I think we can I think we can definitely add that note to draw some clarity there for that recommendation.
Yeah, I agree. And I think we can set an expectation or an indication that, you know, success in this particular measure is not 100%. In fact, 100% of all your visits, you know, system-wide having a vaccine query would be a failure because it would be overburdening the immunization registry with too many queries for decision support for a visit that wasn't going to utilize that decision support. So we could just set an expectation that we expect that this would be a non-100% goal, but would be able to be used for trending and severe limitation identification, something like that.
Yeah, I like that. I want to point out Shali's note in the chat that this is not a provider-reported measure, but a developer-reported measure. So.
None of these measures that we've talked about are going to be 100%. And maybe it would be worthwhile for us to call out, I put into the agreed upon recommendation sort of our interpretive note here. We could call out other interpretive notes, but I mean, when we were talking about the patient access measures, those would certainly not be 100% either. And if we want to sort of highlight some of the considerations that anyone interpreting the data will need to keep in mind, we could certainly do that. I don't think any of these, the expectation is not going to be 100.
Yeah, but I do want to, you know, people always want to get a better score. We could, and implementation teams could, you know, inadvertently overutilize an API in an attempt to get to a better score.
Yeah, this has been really rich discussion. I think we're going to have to wrap this up so we can keep moving on to the clinical care measures. These documents are going to be on the Google Docs for everyone to access. So if you have more thoughts on this or comments that you want to add, please go to that document and add your comments there. And this is something that we can continue to work on offline so that we can move everything we can to the consensus bucket before the deadline. So I'm going to turn this over to Raj now, and we're going to dig into the clinical care measures. And I believe we have Jerry from ONC who's going to give us a high-level overview of those measures. So go ahead, Raj.
Great. Thanks, Jill, and thanks, Brian and Sasha, for all the good work on that set of measures. And the fun continues with a new set of measures in this kind of race to get through all these. So as Jill mentioned, we'll have a quick overview of these, and then Steve Lane and Abby Sears are going to lead discussion on this and have put together a pretty extensive slide deck with a lot of great content to drive conversation. So we can just get moving on it.
Great. This is Gary Ozanich from the Urban team, and I'll do a high level on the slides. Could we please go to the PowerPoint deck, slide number 12? Essentially, there are two measures suggested for clinical care information exchange measures. The first concerns the exchange of summary of care records, and the second concerns the use of third-party clinician-facing apps. That second measure is designed to parallel the consumer-facing app measure that we discussed 2 weeks ago. In terms of the summary of care record measure, the suggested measure looks at the percentage of summary care records viewed by end users and clinicians, and it includes a breakout by parsing and integration of the records. So the suggested first numerator focuses on the viewed summary of care records by users and clinicians, and the denominator is the unique summary of care records received using the certified health IT. The second numerator measure focuses on records that are parsed, integrated, and viewed by end users or clinicians. And the denominator there is basically the number of summary of care records that are parsed and integrated as they are received. Issues concerning the reporting element is variance in the degree of use of the data as to whether they're integrated. So sort of the issue of the provider use and the provider setting. Second is to consider one denominator and then have multiple numerators that capture both the total number and then percentage that are parsed and percentage that are integrated so that the denominator stays the same. The suggestion is to require developers to report numerators and denominators, not just percentages, so numbers can be aggregated and analyzed in a number of ways. And for each measure, collect the numerator and denominator counts by setting, specifically inpatient and outpatient, aggregate by the developer, and the frequency for the look-back or reporting period is something to be determined. That is a 12-month, 24-month, whatever is appropriate. Next slide, please. The second recommended measure concerns clinician-facing apps, and the focus is the percent of registered third-party clinician-facing apps with active users, and active user is defined by end-user clinician authorizing access. The numerator is the number of registered third-party clinician-facing apps with a minimum number of users. Other potential numerators include the average number of apps deployed by customer or average number of apps by product. The denominator is the count of third-party clinician-facing apps that are registered. Some issues includes the authorization of the app as a proxy for usage. The question that we had a couple weeks ago, too, on the API, which is what's the number of end users or clinicians in order for it to really be defined as being in use, and requiring the developers to report numerators and denominators, not just percentages, but once again, like the earlier element, aggregate by developer and a question of numerators and denominators. Next slide, please. So some questions that arose during the discussion with stakeholders and also during the literature review are summarized here. Also point out that slide 15 includes a list of other measures that were considered for clinical information exchange. So with that, I'll turn it back to you, Raj.
Great, thanks. So I'm just going to be the intermediary here. So Steve and Abby, over to you so you can jump into your slides and we can get moving on this.
Abby, you want to start?
Sure. Can you go to the next slide? Yeah, go ahead. Keep going. So I think I'd move to the next one. So we created some guiding principles that we thought would be helpful for us as we explore these metrics, really prioritizing relying on existing data collection to respond to these, to avoid imposing new costs, new burdens on the EHR vendors and or any trickle-down effect that could impact the providers or clinicians. A couple of things we were worried about is for the ability for the vendors to be able to report out this information if it extends and requires computing power to change at the provider level. It would require more data storage, more data collection, and that's going to be a burden that I think will be something we would want to avoid. as much as possible to be automated and have no manual data entry and have no trickle down back down to the providers in any way. And then I think, you know, as you said before, it's obvious we want the developers to produce the reporting for this. Another guiding principle was to try to minimize the costs on the providers, and I've kind of repeated that again. Clearly tie the need for the measurement with certification criteria and whether measurement will lead to different outcomes. I mean, what are we trying to accomplish with this? And just making sure that we're thinking through any unintended consequences. What we don't want to see because of this is that providers opt out in any way of any of the activities, whether it's immunization or using third-party apps, because the burden is too much. And I think everyone has that goal, not wanting to actually see people choose to not participate. We just want to make sure we think about and we're asking for consideration about reducing the number of metrics to one or two and reduce the stratification as much as possible. Next slide. So we had some key questions. Are the clinical data received in a CCDA format? How often would it be pushed? How often is it received? Another question that we had was related to the CCDA documents viewed in the receiving system. What does that mean? What's the definition of viewed by a clinician? Because the data can be parsed and looked different in different systems, and how do you know it's being used or viewed? That's a very difficult and tricky thing to measure. How often do the CHIT systems parse discrete data from received CCDA documents and incorporate that parsed data into the local system? Is there value in differentiating different pieces of that parsed data? Are some pieces more important than other pieces, which might make it easier to narrow the definition around viewed for the numerator and denominator? And how often are they viewed, otherwise utilized? Is there value in differentiating viewing of the data versus utilizing it to actually inform a decision, which is incredibly difficult to articulate? Next slide.
Abby, actually, let me grab it from here, if I may, because those are the questions that I kind of tried to put out. So can we back up one more slide? Back up to slide 19. Thanks. So I really think these are the key questions that we're trying to answer with these metrics. These are not just thought questions. But these are the underlying things we're trying to get at. Again, are the data received in a CCDA format? Are the received documents viewed? You know, how often are documents parsed? And is the data incorporated? And then how often are parsed data viewed? I think the way that the metrics have been published thus far, it's a little confusing because it says, you know, how many documents are received, parsed, and viewed? It's like once you parse the data, that's not really the question anymore. It's whether the parsed data is being viewed or otherwise utilized. So I laid these out just to keep us focused on what's really important here. So if it's okay with you, Abby, I'd ask us, we can jump over slide 20 because that's just a restatement of what we heard before and really jump to dive into these on slide 21. I think these are the key considerations that we want to think about as we move forward into recommendations. For metric one, which is to say whether or not clinical documents are received and viewed, here, as noted, the information for this metric could be captured as counts in activity logs. As the documents are received or as they are parsed rather than through look-back reporting. And I think as Abby was saying, we really want to avoid burden on providers requiring additional computing power, storage power, et cetera. So our thought is that this isn't so much about a look back period for a report, but really for, you know, keeping counts as things go on. One of the problems with the reports is they themselves take reporting power or computing power, yeah, and they could be erroneous if we overwhelm the computing power of the system that's running the report. So I think that's a really important consideration. The second, generating, storing, and transmitting activity logs for each unique summary of care record could require a lot of computing storage and transport capacity, but it seems to me at least, you know, that if you're just making counts as things come in or counts as things are being parsed and data incorporated, that hopefully that wouldn't take too much computing power or storage. One thing that comes up is that some health IT systems are configured to re-query and download updated versions of previously received documents. And depending on how a vendor manages this behavior could inflate the number of received documents, potentially increase the proportion or potentially decrease the proportion of the received documents that are viewed, because it may not be necessary to view a document when, you know, it had previously been received and now it's just been updated. It really depends on the clinical situation. I think that we're not going to be able to solve this problem. You know, that I think the best we can do is set up the metric and see what we learn. You know, it may be that some vendors have, you know, either bigger or smaller numbers, and we may need to go back and figure that out. But I think it's too complex to solve this at this point. And then there was this point about differentiating clinician from other end users, and we do need to make a specific recommendation about this. So I'm suggesting that clinician include all licensed independent practitioners and all nursing MA clinical support categories, separate from other users that would be more on sort of the scheduling, billing, et cetera, et cetera. So while this separation could increase the complexity of keeping the logs, you know, it seems like we do want to make this differentiation. So I'll just kind of pause. I can't see the hands, but are there any comments so far of what we've covered, or should we jump into the recommendations?
Yes, Steve, there are a few hands up, and I'm happy to kind of negotiate some of that. So I think first we have Sasha with her hand up.
Hey, I totally agree. I think, you know, a lot of the complexity tokens that I've been talking about throughout apply not just to the complexity of developing these metrics, but the, you know, processing power that will be necessary to capture it and then transmit it for aggregation. However, I wonder two things. One, I'm worried that the considerations here are overly prescriptive about how data might be gathered and summarized, and that might not be applicable across all the EHR deployment models that are out there. And I also don't know that that's specific to this measure. I wonder if we want to sort of move those considerations to an overarching recommendation that we do want to be mindful of minimizing burden on provider organizations in this program. And as much as I believe in that, any reporting that we do here is going to have an impact on provider hardware. It's not going to be possible to gather data without, you know, using some of the processing power from those systems.
That certainly makes sense. I certainly support the idea of, you know, an overarching statement or acknowledgement of that.
Great. Thanks, Sasha. And then I see Steve Waldron next.
Hey, thanks. A couple of things. So first on the notion of viewed, I think is irrelevant. I think is it viewed or not is all clinical. It has nothing to do with interoperability. If the denominator is, it's in the system already. So I would recommend that we not even think about having viewed as part of any of the measuring. I think the real issue here is it parsed and integrated? And I think, again, the issue here is it actually being able to be integrated in? So because if it's integrated, then it had to be parsed. So I think we should really focus on a measure that talks about integrating the data that comes in from these records. If we're going to use the denominator being kind of a consolidated CDA, then I think that's what makes the most sense here for this particular measure.
And Steve, if I can just respond, I think that, you know, systems really vary by how well they integrate received data. And I think at this point in time, the viewing of outside documents is still the way that this data gets meaningfully transmitted from one organization to another. So while I appreciate you know, the fact that the viewing documents itself is a burden on providers and that a lot of providers don't do that, I think it is important to think about how systems that receive these documents actually put them to use. You know, how do you bring them to the eyes of the user? How do you make users aware of their existence? So I'd personally say that keeping, you know, the viewed metric in there makes sense, because it's sort of an intermediate measure. In an ideal world, all the data is parsed and integrated, and you'd never need to deal with the source documents, but I don't think we're there yet.
You know, this is Abby. I think the point of interoperability is actually to move the data for a purpose. And at first, I was really leaning towards, I love the idea of not having the viewed as you were talking about that. But as I sat here and thought about it, there is no reason to even capture data around the movement of data if we're not using it to inform care in some way. So I think it's going to be important to find some way to measure that. Whether or not viewed is the perfect way to do that or not, I'm not, I don't know if that I have to process that a little bit more and think about it, but at this point, it's as good as anything else that we have to have it inform us around the meaningfulness of the data that's being moved. And I do think we need to remember that the technological purpose of the moving of the data is for the sole purpose to inform care.
I'm a little sensitive to time. Let's move on to the recommendations, unless there are other key comments, because we got a lot to go through.
Steve, why don't you just go ahead? I too am worried about the time.
Okay, good. So on slide 22, we've got some recommendations for your consideration. One is that the metric should be based on any valid CCDA document type received, not only the summary of care or CCD documents. Again, more advanced systems can exchange various types of documents, and I don't think that we should necessarily be limiting this to those who are exchanging CCDs. There are different use cases where different documents are relevant, so we can talk about that. If possible, metrics should count each received document once, avoiding recounting of subsequent updates to or iterations of the same document to avoid that problem where, you know, some systems are designed to keep checking for updates and sometimes getting updates that are not really meaningful nor need to be viewed. Metrics should separate counts of documents received based on a push to the system, such as via direct messaging, versus documents that are pulled into the system, such as via query-based document exchange. This is a new concept. I want to highlight this. I think this is really important, and I think it'll be valuable to see, to be able to differentiate vendors by how well they have implemented push versus pull. I think a lot of vendor systems really don't do a lot with push messaging or as much as they could. So this is a proposal for your consideration. Here again, I've put in my recommended definition of clinicians. And the recommendation that we discussed earlier that the activity log should be automatically generated. This is a little bit different. This is that the log should be automatically generated and transmitted from the provider system at a specified interval with a program trigger. Again, with the idea of minimizing the burden on the provider organization to have that be something that requires their manual intervention. The number six, summary reporting should occur at least once a year, but not more than quarterly. I think the annual interval seems to be what we are settling on generally, but I think it's important that this not be too often. And here again, like the others, we're suggesting that metrics should be reported at the product level. You said the care, I think originally the recommendation was to be done at the care setting level, which I think is more complicated than doing it at the product level. So if you've got a product that's certified for ambulatory or inpatient, et cetera, I think that's the appropriate breakdown for that. And doing it at the vendor level, really, you lose the granularity because different vendor products might do this very differently. So those are the recommendations for metric one. Actually, there's a little bit more. So if you go on to the next slide, for metric 1A, just breaking this down a little bit, this again was the metric related to whether the received document was viewed. it's really important to have a clear definition of what viewing means. And there's some variability, as I mentioned earlier, in workflows as to how those documents are brought in front of users and incorporated into the workflow. And some systems might inform a user that a document exists, but not open it. And that should not be seen as viewing. And then if the data is parsed from a document and displayed or otherwise utilized in workflow, this again is not about viewing the document. That we'll be covering in metric two, that we should really focus metric 1A on the viewing of the document. So the recommendation that comes from those observations is that viewing a document should be defined as having an open document displayed to a user, whether the display includes all or a subset of the data received, and regardless of whether the user scrolls through or clicks on any of the data in the document itself. Again, just getting very clear on what it means to view a document. So that's one more recommendation. And then let me just put the last measure one recommendation up there from slide 24, the next slide. In metric 1B, the real goal here is to determine what proportion of the received documents had data parsed and integrated into the system. And again, when we're talking about parsing data, for the most part, we're talking about problems, allergies, medications, and immunizations, what they call the PAMI data set. But some systems will also receive, parse, and or integrate, you know, some test results, some vital signs, clinical notes, et cetera. So there's a lot of different data that could be parsed. So I think we need to ask ourselves, should any discrete data that's parsed and integrated from document qualify as having, as the document as having been parsed? I mean, if all you pull out is, you know, the last, you know, head circumference, is that parsing a document? Should there be measurement of each of or the number of data types that are parsed or integrated? You know, would it be valuable to know that this system has the ability to parse, you know, 3 data types or 10 data types? But one of the challenges, of course, is that the vendor systems may not today maintain sufficient provenance metadata for data that are parsed from a document to be able to say whether that parsed data was viewed or otherwise utilized. So this is a tricky thing, but I think, again, I think it's important. The question is, was the parsed data viewed? That's the key question that we really want to answer. And then if the parsed data, such as a problem or an allergy, is used to inform a metric or to trigger decision support, does that count as being viewed? Because really, that's the important thing. The important thing is that you put the data to use, not that someone is necessarily looking at the data directly. Again, the notion that collection and storage costs could be substantial, because this, we're really getting down to the details about data parsing and integration, and then whether that's viewed. So I think this is a really challenging metric for a lot of systems. Probably the smaller ones are nowhere close to being able to support this. And then should this metric be limited to data parsing and integration rather than viewing? Again, I think the viewing issue is really what makes this difficult to measure because of some of these metadata challenges. So I am recommending that we separate metrics about how often the data was parsed from a received document and integrated into the system. So that's the parsing metric. And then how often was that parsed integrated data viewed in the system as opposed to being viewed in the received document itself. And again, I think we're going to probably come to the conclusion that that last piece is really hard to do today, and it should be put on a roadmap for a future version of these metrics so that the vendors have time to prepare for that. So those are all the 9 recommendations about measure 1, and I think we want to see if any or all of those can be moved above the line to things that we agree on. So maybe you want to jump to the document where the Google Doc where we have those outlined there.
Steve, there's a few folks that have hands up, so let's get to that. Abby, Steve, are either of you able to see the chat and public comments? Because there's also
we can see those. Yeah.
Okay. There's a fair amount of activity there. I'm going to let you two manage that in terms of whether you want to have discussion on those. I do want to turn to the folks that have their hands up, starting with Steve Waldron.
Thanks. And try not to beat a dead horse around the view piece, but just a couple of things there. So as Steve, you talked about kind of the notion of the definition of clinician, which I think the word clinician maybe is not the right word then, but I agree with kind of how you're thinking about that being more expansive. But I think the problem now becomes if we do that and we use the definition of view, and I think it's important that we do have one, and I like the way that you laid that out, we now have a process now that the view has not really the opportunity not to do anything clinical, right? So if it's a support staff that's receiving these documents, opening them to make sure that it's the right patient and it needs to go in the right section of the, you know, external documents, that this truly is a, you know, ophthalmology report, that now counts. And then the other thing, too, is if it's clinically valuable to review the addendum, then if we're not using those addenda to be counted toward a view, then, again, I think we're just, I think, again, just the view is, I agree, it'd be really nice to know if these data are important and are being used, but I just don't think the way that we can measure this, that we're going to be able to get to that. We're just going to get to the fact that it's that these documents have been opened and has no clinical ramification, that yes or no, in regards to what does 60 versus 70% mean for this particular measure. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve. And turning to Sasha.
Sure. Can we go back to recommendation one? I had several comments about some of the early ones. So I think the first draft recommendation sounds good to me. Both the second one and the third one talk about capabilities that are outside the scope of certification. So I don't know that those will be practical for this program. There's not a sense of updating documents in certification, so I don't know that that could be, you know, reported accurately in a program that relies on certified functionality. And similarly, the whole notion of query-based document exchange is also outside of the scope of certification, so I don't know that that could be reported accurately here. Four, I think, is fine from my perspective, but each health system would have to go identify their user types that would match up with whatever definition is given here. And then I think five and six are overly prescriptive, kind of to my point earlier, across all types of EHR deployments, and we should instead pull those up to a level of saying, you know, we prioritize minimal provider burden, but not try to be overly prescriptive about how every different type of EHR deployment would do the data gathering. And then with seven, I guess my question would be, if you have a patient who's, you know, in the ED and then in the inpatient treatment, and you receive a direct message or you send a direct message, do you associate it with inpatient, with ED, with ambulatory, if they also have a follow-up office visit? These actions are not product-specific, and so I don't know that product-level reporting is going to be practical.
Thanks, Sasha. So that those are the main comments for those that had hands raised. Again, Abby and Steve, if you can just monitor the chat public comments, see if there's anything you want to raise there, and then I'll turn it back over to you.
Yeah, there was just a couple of notes about the importance of the viewing and or lack of viewing related to patient safety, which I think is important to call out. I don't know, Steve, if you want to say anything related to that.
Well, I think, again, it gets to the importance of viewing or otherwise utilizing the data. I think Jim made a good point that, you know, it doesn't do a lot of good to brag about the number of documents received if you don't have any idea whether they've been viewed. So I think it goes back, you know, to Steve Waldron's earlier point that, you know, there is value in knowing how many were received, knowing what proportion of those were viewed, you know, and then in knowing what proportion of those had data parsed and integrated, and whether that data in turn was viewed. I think in the original recommendations, the idea of having one denominator and multiple numerators is a good way to approach this. You know, if the overall denominator is just the number of documents received, and then we can look at how many of those were viewed, I agree with Sasha that, you know, we can't know whether a document necessarily, I mean, some systems can, whether multiple iterations of the same document were received. And it's tricky, you know, the comment that, you know, sometimes there is really important data in an updated version of a document, but I just don't think that we're at a point where we can get at that.
Okay, the other comment Grace made around the granularity of understanding non-clinicians using the data or viewing the data, or anyone that maybe it isn't appropriate to be viewing the data. So from a patient privacy standpoint, maybe being able to have the granularity around knowing who and when it was accessed. So that was Grace's comment.
Yeah, I think in an ideal world, that would be great. I don't think we can get at that now.
I think it might be phase 2 or 3, but it definitely is needed. It's just a question of how do we get there. And then there is a really interesting comment here from Joe about recalling from the past the capturing of data downloaded and incorporated into the EHR and the vendor telling them that they were not able to capture that data that was queried from the HIE and what was used to add into the EHR encounter, and that the HIE is the source of truth related to that data. And I've been kind of thinking through how does that relate to what we are doing. Stephen, do you have any thoughts on that? Because that wasn't jumping out at me.
I mean, when we get data from HIEs, it usually comes in the form of a CBA document. So I think the metrics as we've envisioned them would still apply. I imagine some folks do have interfaces with HIEs where the data is being dumped directly into their system, and that would not be captured by the sort of metrics that we're contemplating here.
Yeah. I'm not sure how to acknowledge that comment. We have to think about that more if we can. And Grace is just playing devil's advocate around enabling and empowering patients and their care partners to report when information has been sent to their clinician and has not been meaningfully viewed. And I think we all agree with that. It's just a question of how and when and the steps to get to that level of sophistication. I think we've got to start somewhere.
You know, I wonder if we, in the interest of time, I don't know that we have time to adjudicate all of the recommendations, and perhaps what we should do is we should spend some time between this meeting and next, giving people a chance to provide feedback as they did within the Google Docs. Maybe what we should do is go ahead and cover the recommendations about the second metric around clinician-facing third-party apps, get them out on the table so we can get some high-level comments and then try to adjudicate them between now and next meeting.
I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think that's a good – yeah, agreed.
Okay.
Because I think we are going to run out of time. So Steve Waldron noted that your hand was up. We'll come back to you if there's time, and then certainly welcome your comments offline.
So moving on to slide 25, here again, I think the key questions that we're trying to answer here is how many clinician-facing third-party apps are installed in the systems? What proportion of installed clinician-facing apps are ever used as intended, and by how many clinician users? What proportion of those installed clinician-facing third-party apps are used on an ongoing basis? I think that's a really important question, that not that just that somebody looked at it once and said, oh, isn't that interesting, but that they're actually using it to take care of patients. And then what proportion of installed clinician-facing third-party apps are used by different clinician subgroups? You know, and this is just a question I think that we'd be all interested in. It's not included in the metric, but I throw it out here as a consideration. You know, do we care whether these apps are being used by physicians, other licensed independent practitioners, nursing staff? Do we care whether it's in primary care versus specialty? I think over time we are going to care, but I throw that out as a question for future consideration. So slide 26 just reiterates the metrics as Gary took us through them. So jumping to slide 27. The considerations that I felt we should be keeping in mind as we come up with recommendations. Should the measure focus on functionality that's offered by the products as opposed to the adoption rate and use? So I think this is, you know, again, gets at, you know, do we care whether this is a product for care management or for med reconciliation, et cetera? That certainly wasn't included in the proposed metrics. Reporting by product, that is to say certified health IT product, may not reflect superior functionality, but rather superior marketing and existing market share.
So I think we need to keep that in mind. Could reporting low numerators and denominators in a small patient population increase the risk of potentially identifying patients? This was raised by somebody else, but I think it's an interesting thought. You know, if you have an app related to substance use disorder that's used by a clinician in a very small community, you know, is there any privacy risk associated with that? I don't think that there is, but that question has been raised. If we're using authorization of an app as a proxy for usage, you know, how do the metrics account for apps that are authorized but never actually used? So I'm a little, I know, Gary, you know, you guys proposed this, you know, a physician authorizing the use or clinician authorizing the use of the app as a proxy for usage. But I would really hope that there would be a way that we could see whether the app was actually used by that clinician. And also then large, complex health IT installations may be more likely to utilize clinician-facing apps. I mean, like my organization, we've got, you know, tens of thousands of providers in every specialty and lots of hospitals. You know, so would it be valuable to normalize or stratify the metrics somehow based on the size of the installation, either the number of users, the number of clinicians, the number of encounters, et cetera? Again, thought questions more than anything else. So on the next slide,
this is Abby. Can we go back one slide? Can I add one other consideration? That I'm sorry to add this at the 11th hour, but I think one other consideration to really think through about clinician-facing third-party apps is how are third-party apps impacted by equity issues related to people that do not have smartphones or access to third-party apps, and how do we want to think through, are we creating more equity issues because we're focusing on third-party apps when a lot of patients that are more at risk and high risk may or may not be able to use third-party apps? And I don't know how to account for that in what we're doing. So it's something to think about.
Yeah, Abby, I think that applies more in the earlier metric about, you know, patient-facing apps. This is about apps that we install in our systems for use by clinicians. So not necessarily linked to, you know, whether or not the patients have access.
But if the clinicians are using it and patients are not, and the data is not equitably available, it will impact clinicians using it, and it will become more of a commercial population usage. And it may not matter, but it's something to think about.
Good point. Okay, anything else, Raj or Abby, or can we go on to the draft recommendations on slide 28?
I think you can keep going.
Okay, so on slide 28, I've captured a few key recommendations or recommended recommendations about this metric too. One is to report separately on app registration versus app usage, if this is possible. I'm not sure I know enough about how certified health IT products keep track of apps that are downloaded, registered, and utilized, but it'd be really nice to be able to differentiate registration from usage if possible. Here again, we had that problem we had earlier of the granularity of reporting of use. I would, again, insert the 1,000 order of magnitude as a separate category in the report usage using these categories, because I think a lot of these apps really are things. I mean, we see in our system that one user will download and use, and that's great, but it's not that, you know, one is not the same as nine. So I would separate out 1, 2 to 9, 10 to 99, et cetera, as listed here. And then to report the number and proportion of registered apps by usage volume category within the reporting period. So that is to say that sort of the clock starts again each year, you know, again, if we're using July 1 to see whether these apps are being used. Because what we've seen is that, you know, someone will download an app, it'll get in, it'll get used for a day or a week or a month, and then they'll lose interest in it. So the fact that it was registered in 2022, you know, doesn't mean that it was used in 2023. And then I think in the future, it would be nice to look at reporting range and average number of times an app was used by all users within the reporting period, and to be able to look at reporting by user class. I think those might be helpful. But these are pretty simple recommendations on metric 2 as opposed to metric 1. So I'll stop there now, having gotten all of our specific recommendations for the metrics out on the table. We do have some global
recommendations on the next slide, but I think we can actually, let's go ahead and pull those up just so we have everything out on the table from our work. That ONC should consider limiting the initial number of metrics and complexity. Abby covered this to assure the success of initial program implementation. Additional metrics could ideally be identified by ONC when they publish version one as planned for future program versions to inform vendors of the need to develop their supporting functionality to keep count of those things. As we mentioned earlier, automatically generated activity logs of real-time receipt parsing, filing, viewing, and use of data is preferred over look-back reporting to minimize the effect on computing capacity. Again, that doesn't necessarily need to be incorporated into the metrics, but I think it's a general recommendation that we've covered here to avoid burden on the provider organizations. And then, as we captured earlier, that for all of these, there may be a requirement for negotiation of new contract provisions to authorize access to this data. So maybe back it up here to slide 28 in case people want to toss ideas on these rather simpler recommendations.
All right, thanks. Thanks, Steve and Abby. I know there's a lot of content there, and we have roughly 13 minutes until public comment. So let's jump into some of the discussion. Sasha, why don't you go ahead with your hand up?
Sure. So I actually had a comment on the overarching recommendation on the next slide. I definitely think we want to be judicious about how – can we look at the next slide? Thanks. We want to be judicious about how we invest in this program and build over time as we've determined what's useful in interpreting the data and what's not. I'm very concerned that recommendation two is overly prescriptive in a way, as I said, that doesn't match all the different EHR deployment models, but also just doesn't necessarily hold true across all types of reporting. There could definitely be cases where adding activity logs of real-time actions is more computing intensive than, you know, relying on a reporting database to gather information about how things have happened. I think we really need to generalize this recommendation to something that is not specific to every EHR deployment model, but just simply says that, you know, in doing this, we want to prioritize minimal burden on the providers who are having their data gathered.
Great. Thank you, Sasha. Other comments from folks? I know there's some people that are not able to use the hand raising feature, so please just chime in or you know, let us know verbally if you want to speak up.
I think I just want to comment to what Sasha's saying there. I completely hear what you are saying, and I think it's a little bit of a dilemma where we're going to have to really navigate this in a careful way, because if we require too much computing and it goes down to the provider, I'm worried they'll just self-select out. So remember, many of the providers have trouble keeping up with upgrades, have trouble with the purchasing of additional software. In the bigger delivery systems, that might not be as big of a challenge, but the smaller practices, and we don't want to leave out the community providers as well. So it's just, I know that we need to do this. It's just I think we need to keep thinking about how do we do this in a way with the least amount of impact, or what we're going to get is not really what we're looking for, because the data that we get back will just not be as valid or comprehensive.
Yes. No, I agree. And I guess, you know, I don't think there is no magical way to gather data from every provider who uses a certified EHR in this country with no burden on providers. And so if we're deciding as an industry that the EHR reporting program provides us with useful data, and, you know, part of what we're doing here in making recommendations is saying where we think the data will be useful and where it isn't, you know, we have to sort of make that call as to what data is worth, you know, that incremental additional cost on provider systems to gather that data, and what data isn't. And that's, I think, part of why growing incrementally will be really important as we have more information about what is worth it and what isn't. But I also don't want us to short-sightedly be overly prescriptive about how this data should work, which
limits the ability to improve, actually, or to use a model that maybe better matches a particular EHR deployment. And so, you know, I think we do have to acknowledge there will be some impact on providers because the data ultimately comes from the systems that they are using. This will sort of be incorporated into the use of a certified EHR in that way. That's part of what it means. And we can prioritize doing it in a way that's minimally burdensome, but I don't want us to be lock in one approach that we maybe short-sightedly think is the best, which isn't actually the best.
I think, Sasha, you're speaking from great experience helping provider organizations through various reporting challenges in the past. Shall we take the time that we have left to sort of move back over to the document in Google Docs and see whether any or all of these recommendations are acceptable to the point of being included?
Yeah, let's do that.
While that's transitioning, as Bryant, I'm having trouble raising my hand. But I wanted to just chime in on the earlier comment about viewing or the CDAs. I think that's doesn't take into account clinical judgment. If you get 30 or 40 historical records from a transfer of care for a consultation, it's probably only the most recent three or four that are relevant to the consultation, not the whole history that's been sent. And so it doesn't seem fair to make somebody have to click through and open every single document.
I think that's a really good point, Brian. I also just don't know if we have the ability to differentiate that, right? I mean, it's true. I mean, sometimes I'll see a new patient and I'll just look at the data that came from the company's care document, and other times, I'll download, the last 3 years worth of documents, and I may look at those in the future or not. But yeah, I think that we're going to learn or start to understand the value of this data only once we start collecting it and seeing it across vendors. So in the page we're looking at, again, I sort of tried to bring over the recommendations to see which, if any, we can move above the line, if you will. So my first recommendation was that metrics should be based on any valid CCDA document type received, not only the summary of care document. That's a pretty big shift from the way the original metric was written. Curious, I guess, Sasha, you had a, this seems fine. Thank you. Does anybody object to us moving this above the line? Sounds like not. Okay, good. Well, let's just actually, was someone else going to do the monkeying with the doc as we went?
I'm trying to.
Okay, no worries. The next one was, if possible, metrics should count each received document once and avoid recounting subsequent updates to or iterations of the same document. And Sasha says the concept of updating document is not in certification, so I'm not sure this will be able to be done consistently. Yeah, that's why I use the word avoid. I don't know. Is this worth including, or should we just skip over it?
Even if it sounds consistently done, is that useful? Then you'll just have sort of not comparable metrics, right?
It is, but I just want to point out that you're speaking from a vendor who does a lot of re-query. Right. So, I mean, I know multiple versions of a document, many of which don't include meaningful changes. And it just seems like that.
When we report document totals, we usually sort of collapse those into one. So I'm not worried about doing this, but I guess I'm wondering, this isn't in certification. So if Epic reports our metrics and deduplicates all of these, and another system doesn't do that, their metrics will look different because they don't have the capability to deduplicate. And then that seems to make it impossible to draw conclusions from the data because fundamentally we're reporting different metrics.
Yeah.
Skip this one.
Stephen, How would you feel about just not moving that up yet so we have more time?
I think that's fine. Yeah, I anticipate a lot of these.
Yeah.
The next one was, the next one was metrics should separate counts of documents received based on push versus pull. And here again, I think Sasha makes the point that the pull is not in certification today. I suspect most systems could differentiate whether they pulled the document versus whether it was received by a push. So the consideration, yes, does it matter that the recommendation is not exactly consistent with certification. Curious what people think about this one. Or maybe this should be put on a future roadmap, you know, so that the systems would know that they will need to develop this capability of differentiating.
You mean to differentiate? I thought you meant that you were going to require them to develop query-based exchange.
Just require the capability to differentiate whether a document was received by push or they pulled it in. More comfortable?
They seem to me to be differentiable. Again, I say that from the perspective of a system that does a lot of query-based exchange and does differentiate. But I guess from a certification perspective, if this is an EHR reporting program for certified HIT, I thought one of the overarching principles was to measure use of certified HIT. And so I wanted to highlight philosophically this measure expands beyond that scope.
Mm-hmm.
Steve, I like it being on a road map just because of the complexity of everything that we're talking about, but I think it's really important, and I would think it even goes to the point of kind of the data source too, because if we're talking about later on parsing and integration, it may depend upon where that CDA comes from. It may be the same, you know, template OID, but from certain sources it's able to be integrated and parsed, and others it's not, and that would be kind of helpful to understand moving forward. But again, I think it's a future, not a now.
So are you guys comfortable with how I moved that above the line?
Yes.
Good. All right, the next one was my suggested definition of clinicians, including all licensed independent practitioners plus nursing MA clinical support staff. We were specifically asked to figure out what clinicians means. I think Sasha made the good point that systems would need to have to do this and map user classes to this, you know, clinician versus non-clinician. That seems relatively straightforward to me. And I think it speaks to, you know, Grace's point that it's actually pretty important to know, you know, have some concept of non-clinicians viewing documents. And Steve's very good point that sometimes this is a very administrative task, you know, just making sure that it's filed right, et cetera, but it's still something that happens, right? So non-clinician viewing, you know, if 99% of the documents are being viewed by non-clinicians and only 1% are being viewed by clinicians, that's an important thing to know. So anybody uncomfortable with moving the clinician's definition above the line? There it goes.
Steve,
making progress. How about that?
Yeah. So Steve, just one, and I think you can wordsmith it later on. But I think one of the challenges is that you say includes all licensed. Okay, then you add. No, sorry, it's a plus because MAs would not be licensed. Never mind.
Exactly. Yeah. And LIP is a pretty, you know, commonly used term these days. Okay. My next recommendation was that activity log reports automatically generated and transmitted from provider systems at a specified interval with a program trigger. I think Sam made a really good point, which is, you know, this is pretty prescriptive, and different people may be able to do this differently, you know, with different levels of efficiency. So I'm happy to leave this below the line.
Yeah, I agree. Let's do that.
We're at time. Are we at time?
Steve, yeah.
For public comment?
Yeah, we're at time.
Okay.
So we do need to switch to public comment. That is the scheduled time for folks to jump in. So why don't we go ahead and do that, and if there's a few minutes remaining, then we can jump back into the document.
All right. Thanks, Raj. And operator, can we open up the line for public comments?
Yes. If you would like to make a comment, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press *2 if you would like to remove your line from the queue. And for participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment while we poll for comments.
Okay, and while we're waiting, I just want to note that our next task force meeting will reconvene next Thursday, the 12th of August at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And we appreciate everyone being with us today. Operator, do we have any public comments?
There are no comments at this time.
Great, thank you. Raj, Jill?
Great, thanks. Steve, Abby, let's jump back into that document. We have about 8 minutes left till we have to adjourn, and there's really not much for us to cover final remarks. So I think if we have a minute, you know, a minute prior, we'll give us enough time. So why don't you jump back in?
So I think the next key one that I recommended was the reporting at the product level. Sasha has repeatedly raised this consideration that, you know, that a patient may be seen ambulatory, inpatient, and ED, you know, even within the same, quote, episode of care. And I hear that. I still think, you know, that's okay with me. I mean, if they had an encounter documented in the ED, you know, and in the context of that encounter, there was, you know, exchange of data, that's important, that's relevant. Similarly, you know, if they had an encounter documented in the inpatient setting or in the ambulatory setting. I think it does suggest that there could be double counting, right? I mean, that a single document might have been received for a patient who had all three encounters and you don't know which encounter or product to attribute it to. But I still feel like rolling it up to the vendor level is really decreases the value of the data. But, you know, others, I'm sure, have opinions on this.
I guess this is, and this may not be evident to anyone but me and some of my colleagues, but attributing direct messages, receiving them, which is not an encounter-linked activity, is one of the most complicated parts of reporting on promoting interoperability or MIPS. And it involves a lot of assumptions about sort of the next chronological encounter being the one to associate it with, which are, you know, I know from experience, not necessarily always clinically relevant, but too complex really to figure out otherwise. So I would certainly say this merits further conversation. I hear you on wanting to have a product level report. Perhaps we could differentiate the denominator, which is encounter based by product, and do that by identifying, you know, inpatient encounters separately in a value set from ambulatory encounters and having the products report those. But I don't think the actions of direct messages cleanly associate with encounters. I mean, I guess I know they don't because of experience with promoting interoperability.
So it sounds like this is going to stay a future consideration. Abby's adding more richness here, but let's skip over this one for now. The next one was viewing a document should be defined as having an open document display to a user, whether the display includes all or a subset of the data received, and regardless of whether the user scrolls through or clicks on any of the data in the document itself. And again, the time interval for viewing the document would be, you know, the document has to have been viewed within the reporting period. So again, if we're talking about 12 months, July through June, you know, it would be whether or not that received document had been opened during that time. Obviously, you know, some of us would be interested in how quickly they were opened, and et cetera, et cetera. You know, how often were they opened? You know, in what context were they opened? But I think that it, again, we asked to come up with a definition of viewing a document. I think this is as good as any. So people,
we have to have
a line.
So we have to have a look back then, because if you just received it on the last day of the reporting period, there's not 12 months to view it. So that was kind of my point.
I don't know. I feel like it's kind of unavoidable. I mean, if we just say the metric is how many documents were received and how many received documents were viewed, which is really how the metric was proposed, this just attempts to define viewing. So, you know, you received 10,000 documents and, you know, 3,000 of them were viewed. I mean, that and then it's going to lies out year to year based on the time frame of viewing. So I don't know. I don't, to me, and again, the viewing, the documents viewed, that's an interesting point. Do we mean those? Okay, so it was of those documents that were received, how many were viewed, not of all the documents that have ever been received. But even so, I think it normalizes over time. Can we move that one by the line? Oh, you did, Abby. You got it, Abby. Thank you. All right. It's gone.
Before you move on, the summary reporting should occur at least once a year, but not more than quarterly. I see why we moved past the activity log report, but if you go back up, do we want to talk about timing?
I mean, I feel like everyone's settling on once a year. But I'm not sure this adds to what we've already covered.
Well, I was going to move it up above.
Oh, okay. Any objection?
What does it mean? Are you talking about, when you say summary reporting, are you talking about data collection from providers to the vendor who will aggregate, or are you talking about from the vendor to ONC?
I think the latter. And so this is all about vendors reporting to ONC.
I guess my feeling would be that that should be in a comprehensive recommendation, not on this specific measure. And if we're saying overall we think it should be annually, then we can just pull that out of a specific recommendation and put it into our overarching.
I think that's fair.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Okay, let's see if we can squeeze out one more. My concept about separating metrics about how often was data parsed from received documents and integrated versus how often was parsed data actually viewed. And I earlier stated that I thought it was just too hard to know when parsed data was viewed. So I would suggest that we leave the parsed data viewing for a future iteration, but leave in this iteration how often was data parsed and integrated.
Do we need to define parsed and integrated? Those aren't terms that are like in certification. Would they have a common understanding?
I mean, it seems pretty obvious to me, and I suspect Steve and the other clinicians as well. But you have a better view from the vendor side.
Well, in the certification process, they're talking about receive, incorporate, and reconcile as the action. And it seems like parsed and integrated are different. Reconciliation might be one form of parsing and integration, but I'm getting the impression you actually think of other things too, even where reconciliation does not take place. And so
exactly.
I guess, you know, I just want to make sure that that would be clear so that it would be implemented consistently across vendors. It might be worth a couple sentences of clarity on that.
Totally agree. Perhaps we can take a stab at that between now and next week.
Sure.
Okay, so we are right at time. So just a couple quick things before we wrap up. Jill, feel free to chime in here. So reminder to folks, please jump into the shared document to review these recommendations and make comments. We're going to need to have a lot of offline asynchronous work here to get resolution to these. And hopefully in one of the next meetings, we'll be able to go back and get some more reconciliation of these so we can move them into that generally everybody approves category. And we will see everybody here next Thursday, same time. Anything else from the ONC Urban Teams or Jill from you?
Yeah, Raj, just one thing. We still have an outstanding meeting that we're trying to schedule between Steve Waldron and Zahid. So if you guys could just send your availability so that we can schedule that meeting to talk about the SNOMED codes and the CPT codes to define denominators for the public health measures. Thanks.
Will do.
Okay. Well, thanks, everybody. Appreciate all the hard work on this. And the more work yet to be done, but we'll get through it, and we'll see everybody next Thursday.
Thank you, everyone.